hosts, Chris Schmidt and Elijah Herbel.
Welcome to it. Friday's here at Hale Varsity Radio. We're presented by Currency for all your equipment financing needs. Go Currency. Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbel, Connor Clark with you on a Friday, a holiday weekend, as we get you sent off to a time with family, friends, and remembrance on the road again today as, well, Junior's in the bullpen. They've already made him run seven foul poles. This is quite entertaining for me, but I'm at Millard South, just down the road. Of course, it is all sorts of college baseball with the Big Ten tournament at Charles Schwab Field. Not enough beer for last night for Nebraska baseball fans as, man, they went toe-to-toe with Maryland, a good ball game despite Mother Nature giving the middle finger and the 90-minute lightning delay. Huskers were right there. We'll dive into it. We'll hear from Will Bolt, some of his thoughts after last night's game, and we'll see if Nebraska can bounce back tonight at 7 against Michigan State. Numbers to get in, can join us today on Hale Varsity Radio, 489-1240, 489-1240. Can email the show, Chris at HaleVarsity.com, and as always, can watch the show, stream the show on the Hale Varsity YouTube channel. Also, the Hale Varsity Radio Twitter feed at HVarsity Radio. Our friends at KFOR Facebook, KFOR Sports Twitter. Give those a follow as well. Can find Connor on Twitter at Herbal Essence. He's wearing a tie. He is ready for wedding season. Connor Clark is wearing, is that a Chicago-themed T-shirt, Connor?
It is not. It's from Austin, Texas.
Ah, the enemy. Okay.
Yeah, unfortunately located, but yeah.
No, Austin's a great time in town, except for Bevo. And can find Connor on Twitter at C_Clark_27. Chris Schmidt, that's me, at Schmidt_radio, where you can follow us along. Gary Barda is off to the beach. He is retired. Too many things went sideways for him, and a really pretty talented 17-year run of team performance at Iowa across a number of sports, so we'll talk about that. Hopkins is looking to get out and find a ring. He has been cut by the Cardinals, so some NFL there. And at 4:25, Jacob Padilla will join us on the phone. He has a weekend of basketball, and to get his thoughts on some of the work he's done with the upcoming Hale Varsity yearbook. In hour two, we'll check in with Bill Dolman, the Pride of Fairbury, and NBC Sports, the professor on summer hiatus. He is off in Denver. I don't know if he has disguised himself or did so to go get seats in Boulder September 9th. We'll interrogate him. Brady Altman's also from Hale Varsity to get a recruiting hit for us as that first weekend of June looms for some big-time visits for Nebraska football. Time permitting, and if he's done with his round, VSiN Sports Network's Danny Burke will join us, and we'll get a look-see this weekend with the Eastern Conference Finals and the NHL. Elijah, the tie, not a clip-on. Super proud of you. That's looking good. Do we have a jacket to go with that, or are we just going with the white shirt and the is that a navy or a black tie?
It's a navy tie with I guess technically a black tie, but it's got a whole bunch of navy little flowers all over
sure.
it. You probably won't be able to pick it up on stream for those following along.
I can't see anymore anyway.
On the live video stream. And you mentioned off the top that this was the wedding fit. That is true, but it's actually dual purpose. I'm wearing it for a wedding later tonight, but as of right now, I'm wearing it for the funeral of the 2023 Husker baseball season. Are we going there?
Jeez.
Wow.
We all watched last night. Come on.
I don't know how they come back from it.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. It just felt like a moment where the hot air balloon lost all of the hot air. Like, you had some good momentum going. The bats have been hot over the past couple weeks. You've had run support. And then last night, what was it? Three base hits? I guess four base hits once you factor in the 10th inning. Four base hits scattered. The approaches at the plate didn't feel great. I mean, and you got to give some credit to Maryland and Falco, their reliever who came in and was just lights out. But last night felt like one of those moments where the balloon deflated for Husker baseball, trying to make a run, trying to get hot at the right time.
Don't disagree there. And you look at inside the numbers, first and foremost, this was a opportunity you gave yourself against a team that is just, I know their bats had cooled coming into the Big Ten tournament, but they weren't cold against you in their home stadium. And Nebraska and Kaminska, I mean, he had some trouble early, but got out of it. And, I mean, six innings is what you wanted. Just one run allowed, six hits, five strikeouts, one walk. It wasn't a walk fest last night. It was a hit batter, you know, fest. That continues to be a theme this postseason. But really, it was Nebraska's offense. When you look at one through five, as you extend through the heart of the order a little bit, they were 2 for 21 last night. No RBI, nine strikeouts. And you can't win that way against Maryland. You feel sick for Shaneman as he gave up the gopher to LaRusso, in the bottom of the 10th after a bit of a delay. But the reality is this, you're 0 for 8 with runners in scoring position. Nebraska's been garbage this postseason, and they've been either great or terrible with runners in scoring position in some of those key moments with two outs. I know that's hard. I mean, but that's when you got to make your money. That's what postseason teams do. 11 left on base again, 22 left on base through two games, just four hits. Maryland wasn't great. They had eight hits, but they also left eight on base. But they had the Big Ten player of the year come up monstrous in extra innings with that walk-off shot. So I don't ever count Will Bolt's team out. I think he's got the right mentality. I think he's got kids that, unfortunately, for whatever reason, have played up or down to their competition. I think you have a guy like Matthews and Max that have been really, really incredible this year, and they have done a lot of work. They both had hits last night, but, you know, guys that were heroes earlier in the tournament had tough nights, had really tough nights at the plate, and, you know, they're a better team or right there with Michigan State, but from the emotional standpoint, man, it's going to test them to come back and be locked in. They can't look at this Andy Dufresne adventure they've got in front of them to get back into Sunday. I mean, you got to go one step at a time, worry about Michigan State, win that tonight at 7, and then figure out a way to at least take one from Maryland and then put the pressure on them for a second game. But that's getting way ahead of yourself. The reality is I wouldn't be surprised if they whimper out tonight just because of what happened to him last night. And that can linger with you fellas, especially in the game of baseball.
It's an emotional gut punch is what last night was. You finally get that kind of pitching performance that you need to hold that explosive Maryland offense just one run through nine innings. You had every chance in the world to win that game, including in the top of the ninth when you get runners on first and third. All you need is a base hit, and you're likely going to go win that game. Shea was pitching really well. You wonder, in my eyes, if that tumble or a half tumble into the dugout in the 10th inning affected him. If you've got a sore leg or you're not able to push off as well, and you hang a breaking ball, leave a slider in the middle of the zone, it gets taken about 380 feet to left center field. I wonder if that played a factor in that next pitch. But regardless, it's a gut punch. Everything about it, last night's game, you make it through the rain delay, the fans stay and support, and they're behind you, and you feel like you have some momentum on the mound. Again, as I said, you finally get a great pitching performance from not only your starter but your bullpen. Whenever they needed double play, they got timely double plays. It felt like everything was coming up Nebraska until two outs in the bottom of the 10th inning. I think it was a 1-2 count even. Like, you're a strike away from getting to the 11th inning and getting your batters another chance to go up and hit, and one swing of the bat, it's over. It's deflating. It's an emotional gut punch, especially the way it happens in front of the home crowd, quote-unquote, in Omaha. I'm with you, Schmitty, and I made the joke, you know, funeral for Husker baseball. I don't truly mean that, but it does worry me how that game ended last night with how up and down this team has been this year, that's going to stick with them. And not only is that going to end in a loss last night, but that loss last night is going to translate into another deflating performance tonight, and they're lost tonight and end the season. That's what worries me. I hope this team is able to battle gritty over pretty. They still got some guys they can go to in their bullpen. You still have Max Anderson and Bryce Matthews, so you're never out of the hunt, but I worry about the hangover effect from that game last night.
We talk about letting a game beat you twice a lot, Connor, in football. You've had a chance to call probably a handful of Nebraska baseball games this year, and you've seen them a little bit more up close and personal, so we know their strengths. And from a mental toughness standpoint, I think they're a mentally tough team, but this might be too big a mountain to climb in short turnaround time.
Yeah, and obviously the game last night, emotionally exhausting, also physically exhausting too, because of how long it was, and you had the delay, and you know, many people were honestly kind of frustrated with the delay. We experienced kind of the same thing in Lincoln with the Salt Dogs last night. Before we even got going, we had a 45-minute delay of our own, and then we get word that Omaha's got a delay up the road. So you get a 90-minute delay. That puts a pause in what was a really intense atmosphere. Both teams are into it, especially that Nebraska dugout. They kept panning over to it on the Big Ten Network broadcast, and everybody was up the entire game. If it was a walk, they acted like Max Anderson just hit a triple, right? So, I mean, the intensity of playoff baseball, do-or-die baseball, was in the building last night. And when you go for that long in that close of a game against a really good team in Maryland, that takes a lot out of you. So it's about how you respond here today. And even though Michigan State is the eighth seed in the tournament, they also lost to Maryland by one run. And then they got an impressive win yesterday. So this is a Michigan State team that believes that they're there for a reason and that they can make some noise as well. So Nebraska really has to be careful here tonight. And I'm with Elijah. I don't know if that Shea Shaneman tumble over the fence did anything for him. When I was watching that live, I'm like, why is he even getting close to that baseball? You have the catcher and first base. I can't remember who was playing what last night, but you had three guys there. Shea doesn't need to be in that picture, right? And I respect the hustle. Yes. Like, obviously, it's a great hustle play. Like, Shea's just one of those guys who will put his body on the line no matter what for his team, and I respect the hell out of that. But at the same time, you got to make the smart play there. You're probably a little bit more fatigued going into your next pitch than you normally would be, and I know that's kind of a ticky-tacky me picking apart this play. But, you know, pitching is very mental, but it's also it's a very physically taxing position, especially when you're pitching in extras in essentially, it's not a do or die game, but it certainly felt like that last night.
In the first place, my mind went on that is, I know those railings are padded, but that's still going to leave a mark on your leg. Whenever you go full speed into it like that, you're pushing off that right leg and, oh, now there's a knot in your leg. It's starting to form a bruise. It's starting to swell. And now you got to push off that for your next pitch. I wonder if that affected the next pitch. And obviously, sometimes you just have to tip your cap to Maryland. Maybe that was the case. Maybe Shea felt fine, just hung a breaking ball a little more than he'd like to, and you got to tip your cap to the guy going out and being able to execute. But that was the first place my mind went right whenever I saw that pitch go into the seats in left field. I said, I wonder if that tumble in the dugout did anything to Shea. Mm-hmm.
We'll dive into our friends at Go Big Redcast. Have a great Twitter feed going. Follow them for sure. But they've got the Huskerwood squares. You pick three wideouts, you most want on your team if you were coach. And again, check out their Twitter feed with that. I love playing along on these at Go Big Redcast. Follow the folks, their podcast, of course, with our friends at Herdat, Herdat Family, a network podcast, and a really good lineup of receivers. Of course, Stanley Morgan and Mo Purify, Johnny Rogers, Guy Ingles from the Devaney era, Irving Fryer, the number one pick overall in the 84 draft, Nate Swift, the pride of Minnesota.
One of my favorites growing up.
Yep, Swift was great. Jordan Westerkamp, Westie's as good as it gets. Kenny Bell is awesome. Matt Davison, people make fun and point and laugh at Matt. Matt was a hell of an awesome wide receiver, I kid you not. Beyond 1997. His senior year set records in a option offense, and Davidson was really, really talented and good enough to get a starting spot under Ron Brown as a freshman in a couple of games. So he's remembered for one catch, but Matty D was a money wide receiver. I promise you that.
And Schmitty, while I don't want to cut you off here, but while we're talking wide receivers, do you see the breaking news that just came in about 10 minutes ago? Wide receiver Alonte Brown has announced his next transfer portal destination. He's staying in the Big Ten. Any guesses? I know you guys have.
Yeah, he's going to Michigan State. He said he was going to Michigan State like 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, he did, but it never quite came about, and I was wondering if anything changed, but today it became official. Alonte Brown staying in the Big Ten. I don't want to derail your conversation, but I didn't
breaking,
know if you'd
seen that. So breaking, kind of breaking news. Like, okay, now the ink is dry, Alonte. Have fun in East Lansing, right? Have fun at Ford Field. We'll get into this, too. Sharing Black Friday. Are you ticked about that as a Nebraska fan? Because I know the NFL is trying to invade, and as long as Aaron Rodgers is not in a darkness retreat, they're going to try and get the Jets on Black Friday. But college Black Friday, Nebraska's done that for years. since 1990 with Oklahoma, and then it was the Buffs, and now you've transitioned to Iowa, and it's been nice and tidy, and it's not always been aesthetically pleasing football games, but it's been tough and rumble football games where there's been a few blowouts one way or the other, but for the most part, it's been pretty tight competition. It's been enough drama to help the turkey digest. And now here comes Sparty, and here comes Penn State to say, hey, by the way, and that's just part of the deal now with NBC as part of this, this major media rights holder helping hand over part of the billions to the Big Ten, assuming that ink is dry on the TV contract. So mull that over. Are you okay with sharing Black Friday? I don't know what you can do about it, but you can sure whine about it. And we'll take those emails, chris@hailvarsity.com, or you can jump in on the stream, the Hail Varsity YouTube channel. Jacob Padilla is on the way. It's Hail Varsity on a Friday, presented by Currency.
And now,
back to Hail Varsity Radio.
South, at least I am, for some JV baseball. A little bit later on today, Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbel, Connor Clark. We welcome in with HailVarsity.com and magazine Jacob Padilla. He joins us on the phone at Jacob Padilla _ where you can find him. Jacob, thanks for a few minutes. How are we doing?
I'm doing all right. How about you guys?
We're good, man. We're geared up for the weekend, and I know you are geared up for some basketball. You're going to be able to check out some more hoops action this weekend, and we'll get there in a moment. Also want to talk about some of the Creighton hopefuls in the NBA draft and the latest on Kisei Tominaga. But I want to start, Jacob, with the Hail Varsity yearbook. Another edition's coming out here in June. June is when that'll be sent to your mailbox. To get it in your mailbox, deadline to get a subscription is May 31st. So get signed up. HailVarsity.com/offer is where you go to make sure you get signed up for the digital and print. And Jacob, you spent time examining Coach Rhule and his staff, and they've done a lot of switching sides, haven't they? They've found some guys that are talented, and they've said, listen, we think you might fit here a little bit better, and you took a lot of time putting a pretty awesome piece together for the yearbook.
Yeah, it's just something that kind of stood out to me as we kind of worked our way through spring and listened to the different coaches and saw some of the movement, just the sheer number of guys that are switching positions, switching sizes of the ball. Some of them were kind of small tweaks, like John Bullock going from nickel back to linebacker, like he's played that spot in the past, and not that dramatically different. But then you got guys flipping from one side of the ball to the other, like an A.J. Rollins going from tight end to defensive end. So you've got kind of the full range. I count at least 15 different guys that changed positions throughout the from the time that Rhule took over throughout the spring. So I just kind of dove into that and went with the different the coaches, the players involved. How they kind of talk through that and what that experience has been like for them, and dove into the philosophy a little bit and kind of maybe some of where it came from and somebody in the past under Rhule that has really benefited from kind of that positional flexibility mindset. So it's kind of fun to dive into that and just kind of flesh it all out.
Jacob, of those guys that have switched positions this offseason, how many of them do you think are going to be expected to contribute in some way, shape, or form right away, whether that be as a starter, as a backup piece that can come in and get some snaps, or even a special teams guy? How many of those guys do you think are actually going to be contributing next year? Because that's one of the unique things with a first-year head coach is a lot of times in college football, a guy makes a position switch, they have a year, or at least half a year, where they get some chance to get some reps underneath their belt before they're expected to be contributors. But whenever it's a first-year head coach, that can differ a little bit. You need results, not necessarily right away, but a little bit faster. So what's your take on how many of those guys you think we're going to actually see on the field come this fall?
Yeah, and that's the interesting part of this too, is like some of the guys that made positions were some of the players that we heard the most about that made big boos. A guy, like I said, mentioned A.J. Rollins, really popped for them. I have no idea the kind of snap count, what that's going to look like for him this season, but the coaches have talked about him really showing up and making plays in practice and really impressing them. And that's obviously not the deepest position in the world, They lost to Von Wynn from that defensive line, obviously not the exact same position, but just in terms of body up front. And that part of that is probably because they were looking to play some younger guys, and perhaps Rollins is one of those. A guy like Janeer Bonner, who moved from wide receiver to kind of like the hybrid tight end, and involved in that is playing some fullback. And we saw it in the spring game that he first play of the game went to him on a fullback dive. So that's another guy that they talked about quite a bit this spring, that a position change. The guy probably wasn't going to see the field at wide receiver, but he embraced this move, and now he's got a chance to be an important piece for this offense next season. And then John Bullock, I mentioned before, is another guy that Rule straight up said is a starting caliber player for them at that position, and thinks he could potentially have an NFL future. And that's a former walk-on who moved, got placed on scholarship at the end of the spring after, again, kind of making that little adjustment, moving up from nickel back to linebacker now. And obviously, we know they've got some experience at that spot with Nick Henrich and Luke Reimer. And you've got a guy like MJ Sherman at that kind of the jack, the outside rusher linebacker position. So don't necessarily know that Bullock's going to be a starter, an actual starter, but sounds like he's a guy that is very much in the mix to be in the rotation. So that's why I kind of latched on to this more so. Sometimes, like, you move guys around, it's kind of a last ditch, like, all right, well, you're probably not going to play here. Let's just see what happens. It seems like this is much more intentional and something that they're excited about with some of these moves.
Jacob Padilla is with us on Hail Varsity Radio. And Jacob, do you think that some of these position changes, especially those going from offense to defense and vice versa, do you think that puts kind of a sense of urgency on that position group that's already there?
Yeah, I mean, if you got a guy that's been practicing there for a couple months that comes in and gets more snaps than you as kind of one of the returning guys there, that might very well might light a fire under you. Could be like, all right, hey, I got to get in here gear. If this guy barely has any experience at this position and he's got a chance to play, then maybe I need to turn it up. So like that could be part of it too. I mean, I think they're with the coaching change, it's kind of a blank slate. Like obviously there are some guys that we know that have played a lot that are probably going to be key starters and the guys you rely on, but the coaches don't know those guys beyond. I mean, they've known those guys just as long as anybody else in the program. So like they still got to go out and earn it and show that they deserve to keep that spot. So I think everybody's kind of got that, like, all right, this is my chance, whether it's a guy that's been in the program and has played a lot, or it's a guy that feels like maybe I got a fresh start now with some different eyes evaluating me. I got to go out here and show my best.
Jacob Padilla is with us from HailVarsity.com and Magazine. Jacob, to the NBA draft we go, and also still time here. The 31st looms next week to take your name out of the NBA draft. Latest you're hearing on Kisei Tominaga feedback, and then also touch on Kaluma and Kalkbrenner from Creighton, what they maybe flashed with the combine.
Yeah, I haven't really heard anything on Kisei, which I think you can probably take as good news at this point. I think that's probably like not a lot of buzz out there, and obviously he didn't attend the combine or even the G League camp. So I think at this point you can expect him to be back once he kind of gets through this process and does everything that he wants to. I just don't think that he's going to hear anything that would make him jump at this point. So that would be a big win for Nebraska. As far as the Creighton guys, I think obviously Kluma has already in the transfer portal. I mean, whether he comes back or not, he won't be at Creighton next year. But Kalkbrenner, I think at this point, I think he's going to be back. I don't know that he's going to hear. I just don't know that he's going to be a top 35 pick or something like that, where you're a guaranteed contract, you're a true NBA guy versus a two-way in that kind of like 45 to 60 range, where a lot of those guys get more the kind of the two-way contract where you're playing half the season in the G League, not quite as much money compared to the guys that get guaranteed contracts. So I don't know that that's something that he's super interested in, and that seems like the direction this is heading right now. I think he showed well in some areas, struggled in others at the combine. kind of like all three crazy guys. Like, I think they showed what they're good at, and they didn't necessarily answer any of the weakness concerns. So I think they probably came out about as they went in with the combine. And that's probably a good thing, I'd say, for Creighton in terms of getting guys back. I think Trey Alexander is much more up in the air than I think Kalkbrenner is probably close to a decision. I think Trey even tweeted today, he's like on the clock, but not in a rush. So he's kind of taking his time, listening to whoever he needs to listen to that's giving him advice, whether it be people in his camp or hearing from evaluators from the pro ranks. So he's got to kind of make that decision based on what he's hearing and also about kind of what he's interested in. Is he interested in potentially being a two-way and kind of working his way in the league like that? Does he just want to get his foot in the door in the league now? Or is he cool with another year of college to potentially solidify his stock if he shows a little bit more this next year, which I think he'll have the opportunity to with Creighton with the roster changes where Nembhard's gone. Now you've got Ashworth, who's a really good point guard, but he's also very good off the ball. So that means more, I think, ball handling, playmaking opportunities for Alexander, which is probably what he needs to show to NBA evaluators.
Jacob, back to Casey here for just a second. If he returns to Nebraska, Fred Hoiberg said a couple weeks ago, he's been working a lot this offseason on his body, and he looks like a completely different player. What does that mean to you? Like, what do you think that looks like in practice next season? How does that help Casey in the rugged Big Ten?
Yeah, I think defensively is probably the first place he would hope, just in terms of holding his ground, being able to fight on the glass, be involved like with some box out and kind of pull down an extra board or two. And then obviously he finished at a really incredible rate last season, and strength will only help in that area and maybe potentially allow him to create some more shots inside the arc than maybe he did last year. And then you've got the stamina portion of it too, whereas you saw kind of late in the season, he started having some cramping issues with kind of the extended playing time that he was getting, where you could barely take him off court down the stretch of the season with how well he was playing with the team a little shorthanded. So I think it'll help him in that area as well, kind of maintaining his play for longer stretches of time, which is something that Nebraska definitely needs from him.
Jacob Adil is with us, HailVarsity.com and Magazine. Get the yearbook, get the subscription in before May 31st. So you get the yearbook, get the digital, HailVarsity.com/offer, where you go. Great stuff from Jacob and from Aaron and Babbers, Quentin, of course, Drake and Brandon Vogel. And can't forget Brady Oldman. So what an issue it will be put together, and it'll take care of you for your 2023 Nebraska preview. Jacob, have yourself a great weekend, bud. Real quick, about 15 seconds, your weekend plans, a lot of hoops, correct?
Yeah, I was at kind of Hoops for Feek event that Lana Pekorski hosted, kind of just a fundraiser for Gretna coach Brad Feakin and his health battles right now. That was earlier today, and now the rest of the weekend, I'm down here at Lincoln Northeast for the MBDA freshman state tournament. So I'll be tweeting thoughts out about that all weekend long and looking forward to seeing kind of the future stars of high school basketball here playing together.
That'll be awesome. Jacob, thanks for your time. Thanks for the coverage, bud.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
All right, there he is, Jacob Adila with us on Hail Varsity. A quick timeout as we'll mow through this first hour. Hail Varsity presented by Currency.
And now,
back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back with you, Hail Varsity Radio. We're presented by Currency here at Millard South tonight for some JV baseball. Southwest and I think West Side getting ready to touch gloves here at 5:30. Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbel, Connor Clark. Give us a find on Twitter at @Schmidt_radio, at Herbal Essence for Elijah. And then for Connor Clark, write it down with me at @C_Clark_27. 20 minutes away, Bill Dolman from Donkey Land. He'll be in Denver. Brady Altman's with us also to touch on recruiting, as that's going to heat up here in the next week or so. Reminder to get buckled up. One of every Three fatal crashes in Nebraska involves an alcohol-impaired driver. Why take chances? If you drink, don't drive. A message from the Nebraska Department of Highway Safety Office. So we started the show off saying, you know, the missed opportunity for Nebraska baseball and how that could catch them with an uppercut, second uppercut tonight against Michigan State. And then, oh, yeah, have fun. Go beat Maryland twice. So Will Bolt started things off last night talking about the lackluster offensive performance, just four hits for the Big Red and another 11 runners left stranded. Here's Coach Bolt.
You can tip your cap to Maryland, and I thought they were really, really good. But I felt like we were a little caught in between offensively tonight, just at the plate. Almost the exact opposite of felt like where we were yesterday, where it was a lot of good aggressive swings and then taking the borderline pitches. I felt like tonight we were a little too picky. And there were some pitches that even maybe that were called balls that we can do some stuff with. And, you know, we'll address that with a group and, you know, make that adjustment, you know, tomorrow, because we're going to need to.
Guys, you watched last night. I thought there was probably at least two pitches per batter for each team that were in the strike zone or could have been in the strike zone. Elijah, I'm not asking you to throw shade at a guy doing Division I college baseball, but you're an umpire. I thought that zone was – there were some really tough takes if I'm a pitcher on the mound. That's my thought.
At least it was consistent. That's what I'll give.
Good answer. An answer from an umpire. Hey, it was consistent.
It was consistent. I love it. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that guy is going to go back and look at the pitch track all night long and be overjoyed with his performance. But I think some of it was situational. You know what? 3-0 count, 3-1 count, widen the zone just a little bit. 0-2, 1-2, you're going to shrink the zone down just a little bit. That's a veteran umpiring move. Is, you know what? If it's 0-2, you give the batter just a little bit. And if it's 2-0, 3-0, you're going to give the pitcher just a little bit just to, I guess, keep the flow of the game moving. That's a veteran umpire move. I didn't have a problem with the zone, to be honest with you. I thought it was consistent for both teams, and I thought he pretty consistently widened it or shrunk it down based on situation, based on count, which is, it's one of those things that people who are armchair umpires might not get, but whenever you've been doing baseball for a long time, not only is it natural, it's kind of expected with the team. You know what? If it's a borderline pitch 3-0, give that pitcher another chance to fire one in there. Give that hitter another chance to go hit one. 3-1, everyone enjoys a lot more than 3-0, including the dugout, including the hitter, including the pitcher. So I don't have a problem with how the zone was called last night. I don't think you can blame the umpires for Nebraska's lackluster offensive performance. You got to put bat on baseball and make good contact.
I thought the pitching, fellas, was good on both ends. Maryland's ace was good, and then, of course, Kaminska did really well for Nebraska. So no arguments there. And you're right on. It was consistent. And I just, man, some of them were tough to take.
Mm-hmm. That's fair.
But it was tough to take for each pitcher. More from Will Bolt, his message to the team after a tough one against Maryland last night, that walk-off loss.
Win tomorrow. I mean, that's it. I mean, we got to do everything we can to win tomorrow. That's really the only thing. That's what I told the team. I mean, that's, you can't be looking at what, you know, is in front of you. You got to go win one game. And, you know, we got to play better tomorrow. Just to give ourselves that chance. And I say play better. I didn't feel like we played poorly tonight, but just we got to make some winning plays tomorrow. And I think we're going to be on the right side of that.
Winning plays, that starts for Nebraska baseball at the dish with runners in scoring position. But you know how mental baseball is, guys, with just the reality of that moment where it's two outs, it's pressure, maybe you're down in the count. Hardest thing to do is deliver with two outs and two strikes. Easier said than done. I mean, Tony Gwynn was great at it. Ted Williams was great at it. I mean, go through the history of fabulous sluggers and average guys, but you got to be better than what Nebraska's been with the 1-5 in the order last night.
You can't expect a guy to be, you know, perfect. As you said, two strikes, two outs. I look at that situation the ninth. I think it was Carey up to bat. He'd been doing well all night long, but in that moment, that was a tough one. The fact that you get caught on that slider, you're expecting fastball. That guy's been throwing heat all ninth inning, then he rips off a slider. It's tough. But you had multiple chances in that ninth, and he had multiple chances all game. It doesn't fall down to one guy. And the one place where I did have some problem with the umpiring, I just want to say, was one out in the ninth inning whenever – who was it up to bat? I can't remember. He leans into the pitch.
Fisher,
that's right. Fisher leans into the pitch, and he gets called out. I thought it was tough to call. That's an umpiring. That's not an automatic strike. It's not an automatic strike to lean in. It just becomes wherever the pitch was going to cross the plate at or where it did cross the plate at. I thought that was pretty inside. I thought it should have been a ball. Regardless, I'm not a Division I umpire. I don't claim to be one. That guy
you
probably knows a hell of a lot more than me.
You might get called up.
But I that was tough in the ninth. That took away some momentum, and it puts Carey in a tough spot and with two outs in the ninth. But that's the game of baseball for you. How do you respond? I mean, and Will Bolt got into it. Maybe we'll hear this cut. The guys are heartbroken, but how do you respond? That's a tough one to take last night. Do you come back today fired up, or do you come back dejected?
It's emotional for now. I mean, these guys are heartbroken after that game, and you know, they invest so much and they care so much, and so yeah. I mean, and I guess those were the words that I used with them. It's just, it's going to hurt. It should hurt, you know, for tonight. But we got to find a way to win one game, and that's really the only thing that we got to think about. And our team's been pretty resilient throughout the course of the year, so we'll be ready to go tomorrow.
Last thought from Coach Bolt on the walk-off, just a crushing moment. Shanneman was up in the count 1-2, and the Big Ten Player of the Year went yard.
That was kind of an unexpected finish to that game. He was rolling pretty good. They weren't taking a lot of good swings off of him, and you know, it was a battle right there. You know, a couple of foul balls that were nearly caught, and tip your cap there. I mean, what a swing in that situation.
We'll spend some time with Bill Dolman here in about 15 minutes. Get his take on things around the world of college football. Gary Barda is stepping down. He thought about it, he prayed about it, and 17 years. And lots of lawsuits, not quite 1-to-1 ratio, but lots of payouts for Barda. But if you look at how the teams have performed, I mean, Iowa Athletics has done pretty well. Also get into the pick three from our friends at the Go Big Redcast. Three wide receivers that are on your starting Husker team all time. Hour two on the way with Hail Varsity.
And now,
back to Hail Varsity Radio.
One final time this hour, it's Hail Varsity Radio. We're presented by Currency here at Millard South for some JV baseball about 45 minutes away. We're presented by Currency for all your equipment financing needs. Go Currency. Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbal, Connor Clark, and shout out Friday. Big birthday wish out to Max, part of the Rawlings Tigers squad, and he's a big old Nebraska fan, and I'll say his dad, Rob, has the best-looking yard in the Omaha metro area, especially if you're a Nebraska fan, has a big red N there, so thanks for listening, Rob, and of course, Max. Max, make sure Coach Mark buys you not one, but two ice cream birthday cakes today. Get one of the Oreo kind, and then just get the chocolate, the fudge, and then the vanilla. I mean, doesn't that sound like a plan that the baseball coach should buy, you know, his player Max that ice cream cake?
Should
or
I come
at least some sort of dessert?
Should I come in off the top rope with my hot take? Ice cream cake, overrated, not good.
We're going to urine test you next week.
Here's the thing.
This is great. I can mute Elijah whenever I want now. And
see?
I might.
No, here's the thing.
What do you hate about ice cream cake, you psycho?
Cake, good in its own right. Ice cream, good in its own right. Get yourself a slice of cake, put some ice cream on top. Fantastic. Ice cream, unnecessary in the cake. Like, what's the point? Like, give me a full slice of cake and a
have
full scoop of ice cream.
Have you not had an ice cream cake before?
I have. I've made my own. I've had one from DQ.
Well, you made your own. That's you know.
No, what I'm just saying.
Problem number one.
What I'm just saying is I don't need ice cream in my cake whenever I can just put ice cream on top of my cake. Like,
But listen, like, I mean, you're limited. Here's what's happened.
No, because you pull the ice cream cake out of the freezer, it's always way too frozen. So now you got to cut through that ice cream, and it's a pain in the ass.
I'm not saying
great.
It's convenient, but you just got to plan ahead. You got to set it out on the counter for a little bit. I will side with you if you go with homemade ice cream. That trumps everything. But the ice cream cake, way better than ice cream and cake, because what happens? You go to a birthday party, they're going to buy one of those damn jugs or giant, you know, with the carrying
the
handle.
The big half-gallon of
tubs
cans,
tubs of ice cream. It isn't bad. It's ice cream. But it's not like you're going high-end ice cream. They don't make the high-end ice cream in those giant, let's take seven people to carry it in sizes.
Are you saying they're putting high-end ice cream in your ice cream cakes?
I think they are. At least I'm after the charges, it says yes. If it's more expensive, it's got to be better, right? I mean, when you go to the bar, do you ask for the well and expect it to taste like the top shelf? No. Connor, where are you at? Are you an ice cream cake guy?
Yeah, I like ice cream cake, especially I agree with your
someone else's
on the fudge. Yeah, somebody else's. I'm not going to make my own. So I like the fudge in there. The DQ makes like... ice cream. It's like almost like a turtle cheesecake, and that thing is incredible.
That raises my eyebrows. I'd check that out.
Now we're twisting his arm. I like it. But anyhow, Max, God love you. Happy birthday again, Uncle Mark. Get him an ice cream cake, and don't invite Elijah.
I looked at that cheesecake ice cream cake. Looks pretty good. I can't lie. I just looked it up. I'd maybe try that.
All right, Bill Dolman, going to join us, get his thoughts on all things Nebraska and also the world of college football.
And all things ice cream cake.
Well, yeah, Dolman will chime in with that. I'm sure he'll have a take on it. Brady Holtmans will also have an opinion. Hour two on the way at Hale Varsity. We're presented by Currency.
The voice of Husker Nation is on the air. This is Hale Varsity Radio. Insight, opinion, expertise, along with the biggest names talking Nebraska sports. Join in with the show at 402-489-1240 or 1-800-825-5865. Now, here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt and Elijah Herbel.
It's Hour 2. Back with you. It's Hour 2 at Hale Varsity Radio. We're presented by Currency. For all your equipment financing needs, go Currency. Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbel, Connor Clark. You can find the show on Twitter. Stream it that way at HVarsity Radio. Also, the Hale Varsity YouTube channel. Nebraska gearing up for Michigan State. 7 p.m. tonight, the elimination game at Charles Schwab Field. And can find and follow us on Twitter at Schmidt_radio, at Herbal Essence for Elijah Herbel, and Connor Clark at C_Clark_27. We may end up needing to just make a phone call to one Wild Bill Dolman. He is searching for service. No doubt it's Friday in Denver, which means it's Friday in Boulder, and there might be an excess amount of smoke drifting down from the Flatirons, and they have a problem there. So we'll try and connect with Bill Dolman. But some fun topics to get into: the Huskerwood instead of Hollywood Squares situation. Go Big Redcast has that out there in Twitter. So fill their Twitter timeline up with the your pick three. We're not asking ice cream cake and ice cream or brownie for birthday desserts, Elijah Herbel, but we're asking wide receivers. Also, Adam Rittenberg Bill Conley put out top 75 quarterbacks since the year 2000. So
we can get that in just a second, but have you noticed the hate I've been getting about my ice cream take? I was asked. Dan tweeted in.
Because it sucks.
He asked me if I was dropped
Dan
on my head as a
you.
Child.
Wow.
Like,
okay, yeah, that's a little aggressive.
That's a little far. And I replied to him saying, yeah, my brother was dropped. I guess the possibility I was dropped on my head. And then how it was always told to me was that my dad fell asleep with my brother like on his chest in a recliner, and then he woke up with my brother on the ground and him still asleep in the chair.
Yeah,
so my brother was dropped on his head, but I think I was in the clear. Could be wrong. I don't know.
Well, I depending on her mood and what weekend it is, I get the, well, you weren't very active as a father. You know, I get hammered by the wife. And
at least you didn't drop your son in his head.
No, that's what I tell her, because she absolutely went goal line fumble. You know, kid's 2 days old and just like, what the hell just happened?
Bill,
oh,
is
yeah.
going to be like,
you dropped him. Do we have Bill?
He's going to be like, what am I walking into right now? But anyway, here he is. He's on the line.
I feel like you have to give your wife some benefit of the doubt there. 2 days after childbirth. Like, come on.
No.
I don't think you can hold that over her head.
I never dropped him.
Well, you're not the one who was given birth 2 days before holding your son.
We're going to just sidestep the whole topic.
Bill, how are we doing? Were you ever dropped in your head as a child?
I don't know what conversation I just got in on, but it's quite interesting.
You hate it. That means you're hanging up. Don't do it. Bill, how we doing, man? What's going on? How is Donkey Land?
I am making a ton of money. On a whim, as a side hustle, I decided, you know what? I'm just going to load up with a whole bunch of runses and go to downtown Denver on a Friday night after about 11 o'clock and see if I can't sell them at $400 per and see if people will buy them. And you would not believe how hot the sales are at midnight in downtown Denver for runses.
Just go stand right outside the dispensary. Easy money.
Exactly. They're going to charge $400 for tickets. I'm charging $400 for runses.
Well, I was going to ask you, Bill, were you able to go incognito and get, well, a block of seats for some of your favorite friends in red for September 9th?
No. Well, that's why I think I was having a hard time with StreamYard. I think once I crossed into the border, they identified my phone and truck signals, and I've been hampered ever since in terms of communication. So I think that they know that I've infiltrated once again back in Colorado.
Bill, thoughts on last night, Nebraska baseball right there with Maryland. They get walked off. Now they got to bounce back against Sparty tonight at 7.
Well, that's not going to be easy, but, you know, I think everybody has to like the way they're playing at the absolute most crucial time of year. There's a lot of fight in that team, and I think, you know, to a certain extent, the Purdue series – was a bit of an impetus for what we're seeing in Omaha, because I know that they went to Purdue not just thinking about what they had to do to make sure that they got into the tournament, right, but remembering last year. And I think that those two things combined have given them a different mindset that maybe they've been trying to find all year, maybe a little bit more fight. I'm not going to, you know, go back, what was it, 2-3 years ago when they made it to the Super Regional in Arkansas. But I think that going to Purdue, you know, intensified their focus for this time of year because they wanted to prove something there and get a little bit of revenge. They won 2 of 3. And they took that into, the opening game against Rutgers. They showed some fight, got out early, let them back in, fall behind, they fight back, and they win that game. And then, they battled Maryland. I don't think there's anything for Nebraska, even though you lose the game, for them to be disappointed in terms of the way this team is playing right now. So with the people who will probably be there for that game, I think things are turning positively for Nebraska. I still think they have to win this thing. Not just get to the final, but to win this thing to get into the tournament. But at least they're playing with some fight and focus right now that I don't think we've seen all year.
Bill, do you think that last night's performance, based on what you've seen this year, fires this team up, or do you worry about the hangover effect? We talked about that a little bit in hour one, whether or not this Husker baseball team was going to let last night's game beat them twice. Now, I think that's the question that remains to be seen. I think they have more talent than Michigan State, but the question is going to be mentality tonight.
No, but I don't think this is the Nebraska baseball team of March and April and maybe even early May, you know, where you think, oh, this is no traction. This is the game. This is the series. No traction. I just really think that there was something about the end of the season. You know, they played Penn State extremely well, won those games. That was a matter of taking care of business against a team that they should have beaten, and they did, right? They did what they were supposed to do then, but they went to Purdue with a mindset to get some revenge and to fight. And I really think that they've carried that over. So I don't see it that way. I think maybe I'm looking at this too optimistically, that the team of March and April will show up, right? But I think that there's been a purpose to their play the last 3 weeks that I really, you know, appreciate, that they're finding it at this time of year. Because let's face it, when they started having some down times, and the conversation is, yeah, they got to win the big tournament if they're going to have a chance to get to the NCAAs. But is the team even going to make it to the NCAA tournament? There was a lot of down talk, you know, for 3 or 4 weeks there. But I do think that that's turned around. And I think the fans responding, you know, it's been a fairly decent scene there in Omaha. So I think all of those factors combined, I think that things are positive, that I don't think they will lose, you know, let that game beat them twice. Maybe it's Pollyanna, but I don't think so.
Well, you talk about the fight that this team is playing with, and I agree with you, Bill. I think that this is definitely a different team. And, I mean, we have to weigh in the fact that Maryland is the number one team in the Big Ten. They haven't lost a series since 2021 in the regular and Big Ten tournaments. So you have to factor that in there, too. And, you know, maybe last night, obviously the offense didn't really show up the way you wanted it to, but sometimes you just got to give credit to the opposing pitcher, and your pitching staff also showed up in a pretty big way last night. So that's why I kind of agree with your, you know, not panic mode thing. But Michigan State is also a team that feels like they can make a deep run in this thing, especially after hanging tough with Maryland and having an impressive win yesterday.
Yeah, I think all that comes into play, and it's what side of the, you know, of the field do you want to look at? Nebraska's offense wasn't there. This is a team that's, what, closing in on 100 home runs this year. Last I knew it was at 97 or 98, right? So that offense wasn't there. But maybe for the first time this season, we saw the pitching, you know, carry a team against a team like Maryland. Let's face it, Maryland's playing in a softball field, right, at home. So they ought to have a pretty good record. But I think for Nebraska's pitching staff to perform the way that it did, you know, maybe the relief pitching wasn't there when it needed to be against Rutgers, but they came back and won that game, right? They held them down when they needed to. They pitched well last night, took it into extras. You know, I don't think you have to really look so deep and examine, you know, last night's game too much. It was a great game. Maryland won it. All right. They were supposed to win it. But the Huskers fought, and pitching staff was there. Are you going to keep the bats down 2 games in a row? I have a hard time believing Nebraska's not going to be able to put some runs on the board against Michigan State.
Bill Dolman's with us, Hail Varsity Radio, at Bill Dolman on Twitter. Bill, our friends at Go Big Redcast, they're doing their Hollywood/Huskerwood squares, pick 3 wideouts you want most on your team. Really love this Twitter thread. I have 2 write-ins along with Mo Purify. I have written in Abdul Muhammad, my favorite wideout ever, and DeMornay Pearson-L. I love DeMornay, great ball player for Nebraska. Not on this list, but I've added them. Who are your 3 wideouts that you go with? You're going 3 wide or trips formation. Bill Dolman says who?
I don't understand how this conversation doesn't begin and end with Dave Shamblin, Chuck Melito, and Frosty Anderson.
Frosty is my basketball coach. He ran the hell out of me.
Bobby Thomas has got to be on my list. Come on, you know, we got to go old school with some of these guys.
No, John Bostic. I mean, come on.
Well, you know, back in the day, you could always name the number of wide receivers on the team like on one hand, because, you know, it was tight ends and wingbacks. So do wingbacks count in this? I think we have to
clarify. Yeah, they do. Are you going to go Richard Bell or Nate Turner?
So, well, what about Kenny Brown? Vaughn Shepard, for Pete's sakes. Well, what about David Sizes? I mean, if anybody's going to deliver that unexpected pass reception when you need it most, you know, maybe 3 or 4 games in between. But if you're going to throw wingbacks in there, that's a whole thing. You can go way back to Donnie Westbrook, you know, who was pretty effective, you know, in the early Coach Osborne days. If I had to throw a couple of guys on there, I think Frosty Anderson, you got to throw some legacy, you know, in there. And what a great name. You know, if Guy Engels is on the list, Frosty Anderson, sure. Maybe Bobby Thomas back in the day. You know, I thought of a Purify. I think that he qualifies as somebody that you'd want to have on there. But and I'm also, and I don't mean this to flippantly, the receivers that Nebraska had during the national championship run in the 90s were asked to do a specific thing, and that was to block first, wear out defensive backs, and make a catch when the ball was thrown to you. We may have only thrown 15, 20 times a game tops, but those guys had to be quality possession receivers, and their job was to just completely take DBs, cornerbacks out of the game because they were so physical. So you're talking about Reggie Ball, Brendan Holbein, David Sizes. John Vedral may have been the biggest pain in the ass that Nebraska's ever had at the wingback position because he'd rather hit you than catch the ball, right? He himself took out a linebacker in the Washington State game in, what was that, 95? One of the very early plays of that game, one of Washington State's best players was an outside linebacker, and Bedrill laid a crackback block on him, which I'm sure would be illegal now. Took him out of the game, actually took Bedrill out of the game as well because he hit him a little too hard with the head. But, you know, you had guys that were asked to go just demoralize DBs, and they did. And I do think that there's something to be said for that, not just spectacular pass-catching ability, but, you know, Ron Brown instilled it in those guys, and they're a key reason why Nebraska was so physical with those teams in the 90s.
Bill, should Trey Palmer be in this conversation despite the fact that he only played one season with Nebraska? That one season was record-breaking. It was historic. Should Trey Palmer be in this conversation among, you know, the greatest wide receivers at Nebraska?
That's it's hard to say because it was just one season. But I would say yes. As Nebraska had a better combination of speed, route running, and hands. I think you got to put him in there because he had a spectacular season. You know, it's like the conversation, you know, I know Joe Burrow was at LSU for a couple of years, but one was far greater than the first. So for that one special season, is Joe Burrow among the great quarterbacks in college football history? Maybe. That's a bigger picture question. But, yeah, I think Trey Palmer, for what he did and how he did it, and he was a game-changer for Nebraska, almost single-handedly won the Purdue game. So, yeah, I think you got to put him in that conversation.
Bill, you're grilling what this weekend?
Well, since I'm out in Colorado, how about I just say some buffalo burgers?
Well, I wasn't going that route. I just didn't know if you were going to go work some ribs, or you were going to do a steak, or what?
I'm a steak on the grill kind of guy. You know, and look, I leave the ribs for those who are specialists at it. You know, I don't feel compelled to do that. You know, but, you know, give me a couple of steaks on the grill, and I would be happy to give that a shot with some nice veggies and potato. Yeah. Now I'm getting hungry.
All right. Well, I'll shoot you a picture, Billy D, of the weekend, the weekend carnivore attack, and you shoot a picture of you, your rifle, and a buffalo that looks like Ralphie that ends up on the spit. That's pretty good. Bill, thanks for joining us and jumping in. Have a good weekend, and thanks for the time today.
All right, boys. Go Big Red. See ya.
There he is, Pride of Fairbury, Bill Dolman. Brady Altman's coming up, HailVarsity.com and Magazine. His take on the big recruiting weekend that looms. And Hail Varsity continues, presented by Currency.
And now,
back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back with you at Hail Varsity Radio. We're presented by Currency. Elijah Herbel, Connor Clark, Brady Altman joins us. Chris Schmidt, we're here at Millard South. JV Baseball gets going here in about 5 minutes. Southwest and West Side set to do some arm wrestling here. Should be all right. Brady, good to see you, man. Holiday weekend. We were asking Dolman what he's throwing on the grill, and he just said, yeah, I'm a steak guy. Are you drafting steak, and are you thumbs up or down on ice cream cake, or are you like Elijah and you just hate all good things?
Well, I'm, to be honest with you, if I'm cooking it up, I'll probably just stick to like a good, well-done burger. I like some ribs, but I don't have the full-throated confidence in my apartment right now to cook some ribs without bringing the fire truck with me. And I like ice cream cake, but I'll be honest, I'm a cheesecake guy. So you give me a side of slice of cheesecake and that'll do me just fine.
Okay, here's the real question though. With burgers, are you the thick pub style or are you like a thin smash burger guy? What's your style with the burgers?
Be very careful.
I like the more the thinner smash style. If you want a big burger, build it out, not up. Make me work like less difficult to eat the whole thing, and you could still put all your fixings on top, spread it around just nice so you make sure you get all the flavors in each bite. That's the way I'd go with it.
And if you want more meat, just add more patties.
Exactly. I feel like we've figured it out, guys.
Well, and I'm going to go a step further and say if you got a flat top grill, that's the way to do your smash burgers. And I have not added that to the backyard patio. I've got the smoker and I've got the grill, but I don't have the flat top. You do brats and burgers on the flat top, I mean, that is undefeated. My grill's fine, but it's better for the pub burgers. We'll get to football, I promise, and recruiting, but just saying. I mean, you need a five-star flat top to do the smash burger right.
No, you're right. I just don't have the equipment right now, but I tell you what, it sounds really good right now.
It does. Also sounding good, Danny Kalen off to the Elite 11. That was pretty impressive for the Omaha product.
Yeah, I don't know if I really saw it coming, but it's really weird because, and I think, Coach Huffman talked with you guys about it, earlier this week. I can't remember. Time gets away from me. Mm-hmm. But, like, his recruitment has just been weird. When he was younger, he was really getting eyes from everywhere, and then about a year ago or so, things just kind of slowed down and the trajectory just wasn't ascending, the way that you kind of thought it would. For whatever reason, things just kind of stalled out, and he got good offers. Don't get me wrong, like Miami, North Carolina, obviously Missouri. You got people looking around, just kind of wondering, how all of this was going to fit together. And then but he always liked Nebraska, he's comes at it at a time where Nebraska hasn't been great successful, but he makes the decision, makes the commitment, goes for it. And then, it's really cool to see him, a homegrown Nebraskan. I know Zane Flores was also mentioned in it last year, but it's always just really cool to see a native Nebraskan represent at a time where recruiting in-state in Nebraska is as good as it's ever been.
Brady Altman's is with us here. It's Hail Varsity Radio. And Brady, whenever you look at Daniel Kalen, we talked with Michael Huffman about this, but we'll get your take on it. How do you think he fits into this Husker offense? Or do you think this is a case of how is the Husker offense going to change itself to fit Daniel Kalen should he emerge as the number one guy? Which side of that coin are you on?
I think it's a little bit of both, to be honest with you, because with this coaching staff and what they look for in recruiting and what they look for in terms of building the offense still, it's a lot of dynamic playmakers. I mean, and they talk about the importance of having a tight end and moving around. Those tight ends are asked to run block, block defensive linemen, but still outmaneuver linebackers and be smart enough to fit in gaps in the defense. You've got speedy backs, receivers. You've got a push in offensive line. Just the way that they mold things seems like they could adapt to what he does. But also, to his credit, he's done a lot of, adapting himself. It's no secret anymore. The dual threat quarterback is a pretty hot commodity around. If you can run, that's going to vault you up the standings a heck of a lot more. And Danny's done a whole lot the last 6 months, 8 months to improve his explosiveness and mobility. And I think you give him another year now, especially like watching Nebraska and working on it still another year at high school. Not to say he's going to walk in, freshman year and be the starter the moment he walks in, but it's going to give him a lot of time to mold and adapt himself. And then the offense can kind of, polish out the ends to kind of get around to fit what he does well.
Brady Altman's with us, HailVarsity.com and Magazine. Brady, we'll get to your work on the yearbook, your feature, and your interview with Matt Rhule, you and Aaron Sorensen, in a moment. Wanted to get your take here. How are things shaping up for the first weekend of June for Nebraska and their recruiting showcase?
Well, it's a really interesting group right now. It's their big priority weekend is later. I think that's the weekend of the 23rd after camps and everything. But they've still got a pretty good slate of guys coming in. Peyton Morgan from Pflugerville, Texas, is the highest star rated. He's kind of a long shot because I know Texas Tech is in on him big, but he liked Nebraska. He had been around before, and he likes the vibe of the place. Caleb Pyfrom from Central is good. good in-state guy. And then you've got Mario Buford, you know, from DeSoto, younger brother Marquise Buford. Nebraska stayed on him with the last staff and really wanted him, and he's ascended himself to a four-star defensive back, so he's really rising. And then you've got, you know, guys like Carlon Jones from Bay City, the defensive lineman from Texas, Ja'Cory Barney from Miami. He's kind of a rising prospect that Nebraska really likes and made inroads with. So the names themselves don't jump out as much as I think, you know, your star-studded late June weekend will. But I think Nebraska can make a lot of inroads and potentially even get a commitment out of that first weekend of June.
Brady, what does this summer need to be for Nebraska recruiting-wise? By the time August rolls around and fall camp is here and the season gets going, what does this class need to look like? And how close to being finalized does it need to be?
That's a good question, because it's still – I don't know. This Matt Rhule coaching staff has such a huge, you know, they cast a wide net. I mean, it's a deep through their full-time coaching staff and then administrative staff. You got so many people who are there. Like, again, Phil Simpson, he was a great coach in Miami-Dade area, I guess Homestead, Florida, rather. And now he's an analyst. You know, they've got guys everywhere that can recruit. So they're still trying to, like, map out and see what they want to do. For me, it's – this is the time still where they can, they're on the tail end of a lot of their momentum. I mean, the new hire, they're getting guys in, they're still, you know, we're going to a lot of goodwill, I guess I should say. So they can get some commitments in. And then, you know, once the season starts, they're going to need some wins. Let's be honest, because it's one thing to want to go to the NFL, but it's another thing to look at going to a program that still hasn't made a bowl game in 6 years. You know what I mean? So, I think the Rhule coaching staff has done what they can now without having any actual games to make inroads with recruits. They need to continue that momentum now into June and summer and say, look, this is, you know, we're doing the sweat work now to make it pay off in the fall. And then let's all be honest here, fellas, in the fall, they're going to have to get some wins and get mm-hmm. some wins early in order to really drive home everything that they've said up to this point.
Brady, let's talk a little bit here. The Hail Varsity Yearbook comes out in June, a great preview for 2023. Deadline to get that as part of your subscription, hailvarsity.com/offer, June 31st, the digital, the print. You and Aaron had a chance to catch up with Coach Rhule, and also you spent a lot of time on that Texas connection.
Yeah, Aaron and I sat down with Coach Rhule for, it ended up going over half an hour, but just kind of sat down in his office, did a Q&A. We realized in our yearbook, we had never done a Q&A with the head coach before. So we thought that this was the right time. And the only really request that he made concerning the yearbook is he's not on the cover, which is fair out of him. And also he's already been on the cover twice since his time. So, you know, we'll do him that one favor, but it was really interesting. We talk a little bit about football, but a lot about his philosophy, a lot about kind of how his views on football and views on what he wants Nebraska to be, you know, team and then culture wise beyond. We get into a lot of that. And then, yeah, I'm really happy with how my feature turned out. Kind of look at tight ends coach Bob Wager, wide receivers coach Garrett McGuire. They're both from Texas, as are multiple people on Matt Rhule's staff, both on the full-time staff and administrative staff. And they come from very different sides of the coin. You know, Garrett McGuire comes from basically one of the most prestigious Texas high school football coaching families, who is now the head coach at Texas Tech. And then Bob Wager gets inspired by reading Friday Night Lights and then trades in everything he has for a motorcycle and drives from Springfield College in Massachusetts to Texas Coaching School in Houston. So it's in his ascent up the coaching ranks and everything that he's dealt with. So it's a really unique look, but it also kind of sheds a light into what's driving both of them and how proud they are to be at Nebraska since then.
Brady, I saw a quote earlier this week from Joey McGuire, Garrett's father, as you mentioned him being part of your feature, where he said, essentially, you know what, Garrett, put him on a whiteboard drawing up schemes. He's gonna out-scheme you. He's going to outsmart you there. And then if you want to outwork him, good luck. He's a hard worker, and you're going to struggle to beat him there too. Is that what we've seen from Garrett McGuire during his time at Nebraska thus far?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you see him. He puts that whistle on. He, you know, pulls the hat down and goes into practice, and he gets after guys. You really kind of see it. It's one thing that He told me about even the recruiting stops and things that he does and sees old friends at Texas. If he sees a drill or if he sees a play or if he sees something that he likes, he's going to make note of it and keep it and write it down and think like, okay, maybe we could do this or maybe we could put a spin on this. He's a constant learner and he's pretty open about that. He's happy to check his ego. He knew he wasn't that great of a football player, but he walked on at Baylor and just studied it. You know, he took it as a really as a big coaching opportunity, even, you know, surprising his dad and some of his attacking coaching in that way. So it was really fascinating to kind of get to really see what drives him and see his viewpoint. And then, you know, now I can put that together with what I've seen from him on the practice field. And it really makes a whole lot of sense.
Brady Altman's with us, HailVarsity.com and magazine at Brady Altman's, where you follow him on Twitter. Brady, what's happening with you? What's coming up on HailVarsity.com?
Oh, man. We're still plugging away at a lot of the yearbook stuff, putting the final touches on that. Got some just quick turnaround things. I mean, we've got Nebraska track and field still going on at the regionals this weekend. And with Nebraska football and track kind of having their budding relationship once more, that's definitely something to watch as they go on. And then a fun tag for the Texas Ties. It's Texas 7-on-7 state qualifying weekend. Ooh. Again this weekend. So I'll be glued to my iPad a lot of the time, fellas.
Well, that'll be good. We'll bump into you this weekend again, Brady. Awesome stuff as always. Thanks for giving us a few minutes today.
For sure, guys. Anytime.
All right, man. Good stuff from Brady Altman. So get that yearbook with Hail Varsity, HailVarsity.com/offer. Quick timeout. Beeson Sports Network's Daddy Burke. We're going to bother him on the 18th hole next.
And now,
back to Hail Varsity Radio.
So this is how it's going. High stakes, several zeros involved. Daddy Burke is putting for dough right now somewhere in suburban Chicago. Beeson Sports Network's Daddy Burke. We may run him down next week.
I really wanted to ask where he was golfing at.
Well, and we can text him, assuming he can see. Well, he'll just have to kind of aim for the phone in the middle if he's seeing three. I mean, he might be getting his holiday weekend, getting after it.
Well, get this. We're not sure where Danny is golfing at, but I can tell you, Pioneers Golf Course, beautiful this time of year.
Whoa.
It's
free shout out Friday, apparently.
It's a city course. I feel like I can shout out the city courses because they treat us well. So shout out to Pioneers. I stopped keeping track of my score after hole two. That is A-OK. The biggest news of the day, though, I found the one Buffs fan from Colorado, my Uncle John, out golfing with us today here in Lincoln, and he had a ball that said "Sco Buffs." And that's the Coach Prime effect. I've never seen this guy root for Colorado in my life. He sometimes will give me crap because, you know, he's from Colorado. I'm on the Nebraska talk show. He'll give me crap about it. I have never seen him actively root for the Buffaloes, and now he's got a Sco Buffs golf ball. So there's the Coach Prime effect in Colorado for you.
It's the absolute slam dunk, trendy take, right? That's what football fandom in Boulder is. Is it trendy? Are they good? We'll pay attention. And if not, we won't show up. Then we'll get bent out of shape if they don't beat Nebraska. You know, song and dance is what it is in Boulder. But good times. So we'll be out there September 9th for it, September 8th with Gary Michaels in Estes Park and Tommy Frazier. That'll be awesome. Guys, the quarterback rankings are out from Bill Conley. I think we all respect Bill's work and data. The last year of the 20th century, quarterback play in football seemed like a quantum leap. You had Virginia Tech and Michael Vick showing that combo of rushing and throwing. Joe Hamilton was really good. Drew Brees, tremendous. But they rank the top 75 quarterbacks from the year 2000. Just sneaking onto the list, really good squad was Matt Ryan for Boston College. Teddy Bridgewater in at 74. And it's interesting when you look at how much, and you guys were really, really young, so you've just seen footage of him, but Eric Crouch came in at number 45 on the list, and that's a Heisman winner. I don't sneeze at that. I mean, he's ranked in front of Eli Manning, but he's behind Colin Klein of Kansas State, behind Alex Smith. He is behind Stetson Bennett eight spots, which I don't know if I agree with. Chase Daniel, the booger eater from Missouri, comes in at number 35. Now, Chase is, to his credit, he has earned money as a backup on multiple teams, and I'm sure he has a nice pool with his NFL earnings. Who's the quintessential quarterback for you? When you think of quarterbacks in college, what's the quarterback that comes to your mind as a college football fan, really the first quarterback or the quarterback you ride with, either style of play or just the fact he commanded a winning team? The board is open. Easy. Is there a quarterback?
Easy. Tim Tebow. Okay. Tim Tebow, final answer.
He comes in at number four. Tebow comes in at number four on this list. Two national championships, a Heisman, and really a really solid runner and better than advertised thrower at the college level.
And I mean, Hunter? That's a guy that with his like kind of heart and soul, he was the heart and soul of that team.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I mean, look at the
– he's the only one that didn't go to jail.
That's what I'm saying. Look at the troublemakers on that team from the Pouncey brothers, Aaron Hernandez. I'm pretty sure Percy Harvin was on that team. Like, you had some guys that got themselves in some trouble, yet Tim Tebow was able to hold that team together, get a couple national titles, get a Heisman. Like, Tim Tebow to me is the quintessential, like – when I think of a college quarterback since 2000, especially with how the game has developed, his dual threat ability, it's Tim Tebow.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of a quarterback. Like, obviously, Tim Tebow is like kind of like the answer, but I'm trying to venture like outside of, I guess, I don't want to say the basic answer, but like the, I guess, popular pick. And I'm having a tough time trying
okay,
to.
Okay,
that's fine. That's absolutely like, fine. Brennan chimes in from Spearfish and says RG3. Is who his guy was, and RG3 was awesome at Baylor, especially like going to a program like Baylor. Right?
The game that always stands out for me for RG3 is it was Oklahoma and Baylor is a primetime ABC game on Saturday night, a shootout where RG3 just really put the team on his back in the third and fourth quarter and goes and takes down the Sooners, who were top five in the country at the time. I think of that game with RG3, but I just have to look at those guys that, you know, went and won themselves a national championship. Vince Young, Cam Newton, like, I know Johnny Manziel didn't win a national title, but you got to put him in the conversation,
Johnny's
too.
Johnny's there. He's not on the – I don't think I saw him on this list.
Like, Johnny Manziel was absolutely electric. He was Johnny Football for a couple of years. Like, when you thought of college football –
He's number 13.
For 2 years, when you thought of college football, you thought of Johnny Manziel.
Yeah. I think a kind of a off-the-beaten-path type of pick that I'm going to go for here, and I can't remember his first name, but Marshall from Auburn, a part of the Kick 6 team.
Oh, sure. Yeah. He was a wideout.
He was fun to watch. And no, obviously
Marshall was good. That
team was just fun to watch, especially the last couple of weeks of that season. You have back-to-back just miracles against Georgia and then Alabama, and then you make it a pretty good national championship game against Jameis Winston, I believe, in Florida State. So he was fun for me to watch. My biased answer as a younger guy is going to be King Coulter, because I was a Northwestern guy, and he would just fly around the field. I don't like the disgust on your face, Elijah, but he was fun to watch for me. So I guess that's my biased answer.
Lamar Jackson, best he did was go 9-3. And he followed he was before. Was he before or after Teddy Bridgewater? But
after
Louisville,
just after.
Okay, but Louisville had a couple of really good quarterbacks back-to-back. Lamar did everything he could in a shootout against national championship Clemson. And it was such a fun ball game, and he did it running, he did it throwing. Mariota, how he took Oregon from a 10-win, nice story, top 10 team to a team that challenged for a national championship. Mariota was special. That's who I kind of clamp on to. Both those guys are good. But the number one guy on the list in front of Burrow, in front of Tebow, in front of Vince Young, and Vince Young's performance against USC is – all-time iconic. It's right up there with Frazier in the Fiesta Bowl. Cam Newton's too. Baker Mayfield. Baker Mayfield comes in at number one. And listen, his career is the reason Conley goes with him. Walk on 2013 through 2017, almost 15,000 passing yards, 70% completion percentage. Touchdown to interception ratio is 131-30. 21 rushing touchdowns, and he got Oklahoma to the playoff. He won in Columbus. He planted the flag. He also got arrested going into the year. But what was the best part of that was our old friend Barry Switzer tweeting out, none of my quarterbacks ever got caught by the police.
The way that you just snuck that in there was phenomenal.
But
you can't put Baker at one. Baker never won a title.
I can't put him at one. I can't put him over Vince. I can't put him over Cam.
Vince won a title. Cam Newton won a title. Tim Tebow won a title. Joe Burrow won a title. Deshaun Watson won a title. Like, go through the top 10. All these guys won titles, and your number one guy doesn't win a title? That's wrong.
Kyler Murray jumps in at 7 as well. Yeah, Baker was really good, but I don't think of him as my 2000s all-time best quarterback. We'll wind down a Friday show weekend edition tomorrow. We'll tell you more about it. Elijah's off to the open bar. Connor and I will wrap this thing up at Hail Varsity, presented
and
by
now. And now,
back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Thanks for spending time on a Friday at Hail Varsity Radio. We're presented by Currency, Chris Schmidt, Connor Clark, Elijah Herbal off to a Friday night wedding. We'll be back at it tomorrow morning, 7:30 for the weekend edition that is streamed for you on the Hail Varsity YouTube channel, the Hail Varsity Twitter radio feed as well, at HVarsity Radio. Some emails in on our quarterback discussion. Top 75 quarterbacks of the 2000s. ESPN.com goes with Baker Mayfield, number one, in front of many. Crouch coming in number 45 on the list. Todd emails in his three favorite receivers for Nebraska. He's going with, when we get back to the Hollywood/Huskerwood Squares Twitter feed from our friends at Go Big Redcast, their podcast. Todd is saying Terrence Nunn, Nate Swift, and Eric Crouch did play receiver for a little bit, and he likes the catch against Oklahoma. Well done, Todd. And Kevin emails in, I'm an old guy, but my favorite quarterback as a kid, Fran Tarkington. Fran was incredible. He got a way about him to wear out those defensive linemen. He's like, well, my bad talking college, not pro, my fault. No worries, Kevin. Fran was all good and deserves a mention anytime we can sneak Fran Tarkington in there. So, Connor, I know you're working this weekend, but are you going to find a grill?
I'm actually not working this weekend, so I am,
really?
I am a free college student for a weekend, which is fun. So I don't know if I will end up finding a grill. I know they have some at my apartment complex, so maybe I'll have to make my way over there. But yeah, just going to have a relaxing weekend. It won't be a long weekend, though, because we'll be back on Monday at the ballpark. So,
No, that's all good, man. So, well, if I end up around baseball firing the grill up, we'll throw some vittles on for you. That sounds like a plan. Right now we are scoreless between Southwest JV, as a little looper to center was misplayed. Runners at the corners right now for Southwest, just one out. They're threatening, scoreless West Side and Southwest. So that's on the docket. Plenty of baseball this weekend, thanks to so many who have served and so many who have paid the ultimate sacrifice as we remember this Memorial Day. You can get the podcast with Hail Varsity, Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, where you can get the audio, can get the segments you like, the interviews. We checked in with Brady Altman's and Jacob Padilla from Hail Varsity, and also Bill Dolman to kick off this second hour. So those are all there for you a la carte, or you're welcome to take the whole show if you like it. Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, give us a review, good, bad, or ugly. We're excited to hear your feedback. The full video portion of the show, Hail Varsity YouTube. We'll be back at you tomorrow, 7:30, for the weekend edition. Mark Kranak, myself, Elijah Herbal. Connor, get your meat sweats on this weekend and get some cheesecake. You and Brady go fire up some cheesecake.
Yeah, I might have to text him after we're done here and try and find a good place in Lickety to go get some cheesecake.
Dude, where do I get cheesecake?
Seriously,
that's
come
the
on.
Question. All right, everyone take care. Enjoy your family and friends this weekend. Thanks for tuning in to Hail Varsity. Back at you tomorrow morning, 7:30, presented by Currency.